Radovan Karadzic was arrested on Monday in Belgrade after nearly 13 years on the run. One of the most wanted men in the world, Karadzic stands accused of genocide and crimes against humanity for his part orchestrating the siege of Sarajevo and the Srebrenica massacre during Bosnia's civil war. After extradition to the Netherlands, he'll stand trial at the International Criminal Tribunal for the former Yugoslavia in The Hague. Karadzic adopted an alias, wore thick glasses, and grew a bushy white beard to disguise his identity, and worked openly in Belgrade as a doctor of alternative medicine. His arrest brings Serbia one step closer to admission into the European Union. In an op-ed for the Washington Post titled The Face of Evil, U.S. Ambassador Richard Holbrooke described his meeting with Radovan Karadzic as NATO airstrikes finally forced Bosnia Serbs to negotiate. If you have questions about what Karadzic's capture means for Bosnia, for Serbia, and for war crimes tribunals, give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. Ambassador Richard Holbrooke was the chief architect of the Dayton Peace Agreement that ended the Bosnian War. He joins us now from our bureau in New York. It's nice to have you on the program today, sir.
Good to be with you.
And you met Karadzic just once in 1995. Can you describe that meeting for us?
We were on our fifth trip to Belgrade. The war was at an intense level. NATO bombers had been bombing the Bosnian Serbs for 2 weeks. Three of our colleagues had been killed. Bob Frazier, Joe Kruzel, and Nelson Drew had been killed on our first attempt to get into Sarajevo. The city of Sarajevo was under siege, and we came into Belgrade as we were bombing. And I said to my colleagues that I thought Karadzic and Mladic might be brought into the negotiations by Milosevic this time around. I shouldn't explain that we had deliberately cut Mladic and Karadzic out of the negotiations. They'd negotiated with a lot of other people, including Jimmy Carter. But we just thought bring them in made it more odious. They were already indicted war criminals. So
Slobodan Milosevic, the president of Serbia, would later be indicted.
He would later be indicted. And we wanted to force him to take responsibility for the war he was bankrolling and not legitimize these terrible, terrible men. So we landed in Belgrade September 13, 1995. My negotiating team, General Wes Clark, Chris Hill, now the North Korea negotiator, myself, three or four other people. Sure enough, Milosevic took us out to an old hunting lodge outside Belgrade, and he said, Karadzic and Mladic are in a villa nearby. Would you be willing to see him? We had prepared for this, and we decided we would do it once and only once, but we laid down some ground rules to Milosevic. He would have to take personal responsibility for their conduct. If they gave us any crap, if they started lecturing us, we would walk out and the bombing would intensify. And then Milosevic said, okay. And then in the distance, as the fading light came over the countryside, we saw two men get out of their Mercedes and walk towards us across the field. They were just unmistakable, the stocky, combat, fatigue, Mladic, walking as though he was walking through a mud field, and the taller man in a suit with that unmistakable shock of white hair, Radovan Karadzic. They came to us. I did not shake their hands. Some of my colleagues did. Others didn't. It was their choice. And we sat down to negotiate. And at the end of 13 hours, and after a great deal of drama, we had agreed that the siege of Sarajevo would be lifted the next day. And it was.
There was one, though, dramatic moment during those negotiations when you insisted that the siege of Sarajevo be lifted immediately.
Well, early on, Karadzic, of course, tested us, as we knew he would. He started yelling and screaming that Serbs were victims, they were being humiliated. He compared us to April 6, 1941, the day that Hitler had bombed the Serbs in Belgrade, a famous day in Serbian history. And I turned to Milosevic, and I said, you know, you made an agreement with us that this wouldn't happen, and if it continues to happen, we're going to walk out and the bombing will intensify. And then I turned to Karadzic. Karadzic then said that he was a personal friend of Jimmy Carter's, and he had Carter's phone number, and he was going to go call Carter and get Carter involved. So for the only time in 13 hours, I spoke to Karadzic directly, and I said, listen, I worked for President Carter as Assistant Secretary of State. I respect him, but we only have one president at a time, and our president is Bill Clinton, and that's the only person we work for. And you go to call Carter, we're leaving, and the bombing intensifies. And Milosevic said something to him in Serbian, and he sat down, and the negotiations proceeded. That day, I must tell you frankly, that day, the man who was much scarier was Ratko Mladic. One had the sense that Karadzic was the intellectual architect of ethnic cleansing. He really believed all the mythology about the Serbs that he was a purveyor of. But the mass murderer, the hands-on murderer, was Ratko Mladic.
And he, of course, is still at liberty somewhere in either Serbia or Bosnia-Herzegovina.
Absolutely. But I think this is a big deal. This was not, you know, your listeners need to really focus on something. 13 years, NATO failed to capture Karadzic. He was captured by the Serb government after an election in which the pro-Western government, Boris Tadic's government, was elected. I think the people of the world should know today that the hero of the story is Boris Tadic, a very brave man whose best friend, former Prime Minister Zoran Djindjic, was murdered after he had arrested Milosevic and sent Milosevic to The Hague. And I talked to Tadic a few months ago in a conference in Brussels, and he talked a great deal about Djindjic, and he talked about the danger to his life, and he's taken a very important step. It's going to help stabilize not only Serbia, but Bosnia.
And you also pointed out that this should boost the idea of war crimes tribunals, even though Mladic still and Karadzic for 13 years, unarrested after their indictment.
You're absolutely right. You know, 12, 13 years is a long time, and there's no excuse for taking this long, particularly since many, many people were in on the secret of hiding him and are still in on the secret of hiding Mladic. But what's important here is that even though it took this period of time, he never was free to come out in public. He had to do all this from the shadows. He was always under pressure. And other war criminals, and I'm thinking particularly of the president of Sudan, Mr. Bashir, who was indicted last week by the International Criminal Court, have got to understand after Karadzic's arrest that no matter how long it takes, once you're indicted, you are on the lam for the rest of your life. And it isn't just a few Nazi hunters as it was in the days when the Israelis went to Argentina and snatched Eichmann. Next time around, it'll be an international arrest warrant as it was for Karadzic, as it is for Mladic, and as it now is for Bashir.
Let's get some listeners in on the conversation. We're talking with Ambassador Richard Holbrooke about his op-ed in the Washington Post today called The Face of Evil, 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. Let's go to line three, and David's there. David calling us from San Antonio, Texas.
Hi. I'm calling because I'm trying to understand how an educated psychologist like Karadzic could somehow justify in his own head the need for ethnic separation of the different groups, and how he can somehow continue to propagate that and go along with, I guess, the leaders at that time and justify the ethnic cleansing, the killings that took place at that time. So I guess I'm trying to understand that. I can see, you know, the common person that is maybe not as educated, not prepared, falling into that trap, into that propaganda. But here's this man who is supposedly quite well prepared academically, and yet behaves very, very irresponsibly. And I'm trying to understand, how is it that person goes from that extreme into this criminal mind?
David, it's an excellent question. I guess the easiest answer is a degree, even from Columbia University, where Karadzic went to school, doesn't turn you into a smart person. There can be, if you'll pardon the expression, evil geniuses. The biggest evil genius in that sense was Goebbels. And Karadzic was in the Goebbels tradition, a mass communicator who preached race hate. It wasn't that he was stupid. It was that he was evil. And I use the word evil deliberately. President Bush really messed that word up with his phrase, axis of evil, for Iraq, Iran, and North Korea. But there are such things as evil. And the article which Neil referred to at the beginning of the program in today's Washington Post, I asked the Washington Post to have the headline, "The Face of Evil." Not the face of a bad guy, evil. There are evil people out there, and we shouldn't overuse the word as President Bush has used it, but this man was absolutely unmitigated evil.
Appreciate your comment. Thank you.
David, thanks very much for the call. We're talking with Richard Holbrook, the chief architect of the Dayton Peace Agreement that ended the war in Bosnia. He writes a monthly column for the Washington Post, and there's a link to his latest, The Face of Evil, on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. And you're listening to Talk of the Nation, coming to you from NPR News. And Ambassador Holbrook, going back to the issue, you mentioned the International Criminal Court. The United States is not a party to that agreement that doesn't participate in the ICC. Is it time to change that stance, do you think?
There were some problems with the ICC, which the Bush administration led them to repudiate the American signature on the treaty. President Clinton had signed it. Bush repudiated it. In the real world, however, the Congress is not going to ratify this treaty in its current form. You need 67 votes, as we all know, for a treaty, and it's not going to happen here. So I think there's some issues that need to be fixed on it from an American standpoint. There are just too many people out there who are afraid that an American official might be transiting an airport in some place like Brussels and get arrested or detained or something. I think these fears are enormously exaggerated, but they're real enough so that to get American ratification of the International Criminal Court will take some work. Nonetheless, we should be supporting the effort, and if anything proves it, it's Karadzic and Bashir.
Let's see if we can get another question from the microphone here at the museum.
Hi, my name is Fran Lunny. I live in Alexandria, Virginia. And in your description of Karadzic as evil, did you feel that coming, emanating from him when you met him? What was his persona?
You know, it's a very good question. If you meet a person and you don't know they're evil, will you feel it? Well, in this case, it was the reverse. We knew this man was evil before we met him. So I can't tell if I could feel evil emanating from him because I knew he was evil or the reverse. It's a question psychiatrists and psychologists can ruminate on. All I know was if Hollywood was casting two war criminals, they couldn't do better than Ratko Mladic and Radovan Karadzic. They really looked the part.
Thanks very much for the question. Let's see if we can go now to... Line 6. Line 6 is Hucha. I think I've got that correct. Hucha calling us from Jacksonville, Florida. I hope I didn't mispronounce your name.
Yes. Hi. My name is Hucha, and I'm calling from Jacksonville, Florida. And I really appreciate to Mr. Holbrook his words, for his absolutely right words, and his kindness. I am a survivor from Srebrenica. And I was walk in a Potocari. Mr. Holbrook, I think he's familiar with all these names. And when I see personally, probably 100 yards from myself, I see Ratko Mladic and with his guard and a couple of my cousins is already put in a bus, separate from his family. I was lucky that day, I don't know how, but I escaped through wire fence of United Nations from the
compound there, yeah.
Nation troops, and I escaped from Srebrenica after 31 days. I was come in a territory of Kladan. But I have one question. I would like to forget about that because they hurt me a lot. They're going to hurt me all my life. But I have one question. Did you, Mr. Holbrook, I know you are a main negotiator from United States, not just from United States, from all world. You represent human being, human kindness at that time. And all our life, it was in your hand. Did you know, did you have anything on your heart, what's going to happen in Srebrenica before these negotiations with Ratko Mladic and Radovan Karadzic? Did you know what's going to happen in Srebrenica? Or these two monster, the monster, the devil, that was lying to you? Did you have any promise from them? Please give me answer from bottom of your heart. Not just
we're running out of time, so let's give Ambassador Holbrooke a chance to respond.
Well, my heart goes out to you and to your family. I was in Srebrenica several times, most recently as a member of the United States delegation on the 10th anniversary of the terrible events you just described. I stood in the same spot you did in Potokari, in the factory there, and I prayed with the mothers and survivors in the fields as the bodies were reburied. To your question, I knew Srebrenica was the most dangerous place in Europe. 2 months before the tragedy that befell you and your friends and family, I talked directly to Dutch officials about it, including Her Majesty the Queen of the Netherlands. And I said to her at a conference when I sat next to her, I took out a napkin and I drew a map of Srebrenica, and I said, look, here's the town, here are the hills, here are your troops, here are the Serb gunners. You are in the most extreme danger, and you must do something about it. I argued very strongly for reinforcing the UN forces there, not pulling them out. And then, when the Dutch started to pull out, I argued as strongly as I could that they should remain and we should bomb. But the Dutch, the British and the French had their troops at Garagd and Zeppa, two other towns
and
nearby,
just got,
which also spoke. They simply refused.
Ambassador Holbrooke, I apologize, but we have to duck away. We have no time left. We'll pick this up another time. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News.